Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new signature wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat basement, average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Thoughts of suicide may feel impossible to overcome, but with help and support, you can find hope and meaning. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK to speak to a counselor, or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. It's free, it's confidential, it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And even if it feels like it, you are not alone.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason...
Welcome to a special edition of Disasters in the Making. It's our holiday special. We're on Wednesday night. We're on pre-Thanksgiving because this is our Thanksgiving episode. My name is Brad Slager. I'm an entertainment writer at a number of outlets. And every other week we delve into the dark side of Hollywood and dredge up some classic bad films to tie in with things. And this week, being Thanksgiving, we did find a disastrous cinematic offering that ties into the holiday. Joining me on every episode from ScreenRant.com is Paul Young. Paul, how is everything this week?
It is good right now, but as you start listening to the show Thursday night, I will be face down in a turkey coma and pumpkin pie.
As it should be. That's the good thing about this holiday is that when I get in that mode Thursday evening, I can blame it on the tryptophan and not the bourbon.
My mom tried to explain to me that the tryptophan thing was a myth because she read it on the internet.
Oh, well, let's just keep that under wraps because that's kind of my my escape.
I love my mom and didn't want to argue, so we brought up politics instead.
Well played. Well played. Well, this being the holiday for family, we figured we would go ahead and slide another chair up to the table and bring a member of our KLRN family in to join us. She's got a show that was on last evening, and Aggie Reakin is with us. Aggie, how is everything in Texas this evening?
Hi, it's great. Actually, we have great weather leading up to Thanksgiving, so I cannot complain. It has been really nice. Tricking.
You're supposed to complain. That's what Twitter and social media is all about.
I am supposed to complain because on top of that, I'm Hispanic and I'm doing all the cooking, but
okay,
I'm enjoy the weather.
Complaining about having to cook. Such a first world problem.
It is. It's a huge thing. Well, I'm actually doing three dinners, so I can complain. Yes. One Thursday, one Friday, and last one is on Saturday. Because, you know, my sister lives up the street and her husband is actually a deputy in the sheriff's department. And he actually volunteers every Thanksgiving so that everybody else can have the day off. So they celebrate it on Friday. And then one of her kids is not able to make it Friday or Thursday. So we're doing it on Saturday so that she and her family can come join us. So it's always a... It's Holy always a damn. Drama. Yeah.
Hey, we do the same thing. I had a party with my brother and everybody last night. And then I work Thursday night, which is why we're kind of recording this early. And we're going to have another party there. And then we'll go over to my in-law's house Thursday afternoon. And we'll do another one there. So it's nothing but turkey all the time over here.
My goodness. You folks actually like your families a lot. That's amazing.
No. I never said that. I said I'm doing it. I didn't say I'm liking it.
Food is involved, Brad.
But it's
okay,
food.
Understood.
And to be fair, we're not having turkey this year at all.
Really?
We're having three dinners, but no turkey.
Yeah, I'm doing duck on Thursday. We're doing ham on Friday, and fajitas on Saturday.
Texans are weird.
I know, we are.
Well, I applaud the effort nonetheless, and I'm kind of jealous, too, with the
Be jealous,
various
Brad.
Food stuffs. I can get in on that, but not, usually with us, we go stupid with a huge family party. We do a couple of turkeys. We always have way more meat than necessary, and I always end up taking half a turkey home and gorging for the weekend, so that'll be...
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Didn't say there was. It's all... This will be a protein hoard for me this weekend, and that's what it's all about. I'll sit there in front of football, and I just dunk cold turkey in mayonnaise and pig out and have a blast by myself.
I'm sorry. Did you just say dip cold turkey in mayonnaise?
I do.
That is worse than any movie you and I have talked about the entire time we've been together.
My evens can't right now.
What is happening? Aggie, would you like to start our own show? Because I didn't realize that this is what my partner was all
this
about when
like
I signed on for this.
I'm sure you're really
Florida.
Shocked at my
turkey
bad
and mayonnaise over here.
Hey, I make no apologies or excuses. I just do it because I like it, and I'll just sit there like Henry VIII and get the hell out of here.
Plus side, we now know who all the commie bots are. They're making themselves known.
Isn't that like a Dutch thing to dip everything in mayo?
Yeah. It's a weird thing.
I mean, I'm not kidding. When I was there, they love their pommes frites in with mayonnaise. That's how they eat it. So I guess it's your Dutch heritage.
There you go. Being a thoroughbred like I am, then I'm just being true to my people. So you haters,
exactly.
Stop it. Quit othering me.
Othering.
Well, I will say this. The other reason we brought Aggie on with us is that she just happens to also be an aficionado of subgrade Hollywood cinema. So she's an appreciator of this realm.
I'm doing the GIF version of that Kermit the Frog waving his arms back and forth excitedly. Have it in your head too.
To give a prime example of it, it was this past Saturday. In fact, I was gifted a very bad film for my birthday on DVD, so I figured I would go ahead and do a drunken Twitter feed of sorts during Saturday football and such. And I'm uncorking this, and Aggie was on the road, and then she said, "Oh, I didn't know what movie are you doing?" And I, unfurled this title to her. She's like, "Oh, I just watched that last week." I was like, "Get the hell out of here!" No, you did not.
I did too.
Amazingly enough, it's called Jurassic Galaxy. Nobody's ever heard of this. Nobody's ever heard of the filmmakers. And here's Aggie already had watched this.
Well, not only that, I this was my second viewing of it. I had actually seen it a couple of months previously. It had been playing on Stars. And I was curious because the star of it had a bit of a cameo in, I believe it was Justice League. So that's why I got curious.
Which one was in Justice League?
He was, remember the at the beginning, the burglar that Batman apprehends?
That's him?
That's him.
Right. No. He wasn't in Jurassic Galaxy.
Well, maybe I'm confusing them. But that's why I got, hooked on it. And
he
I
was,
figured,
however, in the children's epic Monster Trucks.
Yes. He was in that one.
That is a modern day classic that people underappreciate.
So yes, Aggie has over time proven herself to be an acolyte of this level of cinema. So we decided to invite her on for the holiday episode. Now, when looking for bad Thanksgiving films, a movie that will fill the criteria of this program, it's a little difficult because there's not a ton of them out there. Pretty limited scope of Thanksgiving films to begin with. And as far as notably bad ones, there's a limitation on it. But I think we did pretty good here. I know. I kind of had this title in the back of my mind for quite a while as it is. It's just one of those I had segregated as a Thanksgiving film. And then when I thought about this episode and I was like, wait a second, this was set in Jacksonville. And when I threw that at Paul, I knew we were locked in. So
yeah. They had an entire horror fest with this movie at the center of it in 2015 in a Ramada Inn down the street from my house. And I didn't know this movie existed.
What? How did they not contact you?
I don't know. I am very disappointed in both them and myself.
or is this the Ramada Inn that you've been banned from? Maybe that was it.
I think it's the same Ramada Inn that they have the city's only comedy club in it.
Okay.
And people like Tommy Davison and people like that come here and put stuff on there. Yeah.
I'm just curious of them showing films at a Ramada Inn. I'm assuming this would entail some sort of portable filming.
One would assume, but because I didn't go, it's all assumptions.
I mean, I've suffered through that very thing where they do have portable projection booths. I've seen this when I was at Sundance because, they talk about all the glamour and glitz of Sundance. Well, if you go there as a journalist, no. You go to convention rooms at hotels. It literally is a collapsible booth with about three or four rows of aluminum risers and then card table chairs for the rest of the critics. So you're in a room with 30 people in a collapsible wall convention room at the Days Inn or such equivalent. So there's your Sundance glamour. I was, yeah, I'm going to go check this movie out. And they were like guiding me through. I was like, wait a second, this is a hotel. Wait a second, why am I going down a hall? What the hell am I doing here? So
kind of shady.
I've experienced that myself firsthand. Well, the movie we're doing tonight, it's, I can't call it a classic really, because this thing was kind of
it is
a mystery to a lot of people. In fact,
doing a little research on this thing, it is very much a cult classic. It has a huge following.
Yeah.
Well, it does now. But it was one of these that's kind of been unearthed. Every so often we hear about these titles that come up, you know, like the Miami Connection, where it was made in the 80s and disappeared for 2 decades and somebody discovered it. I mean, Joe Bob Briggs didn't even know about this film until about 4 or 5 years ago. And this thing came out in the late 80s. It's called Blood Rage. And I think as far as some of the better, more popular slasher titles go, this one actually carries a number of titles. So, for instance, you queue up Blood Rage, or you've got the DVD of Blood Rage, and the very first thing that happens is the title comes up and it says Slasher. Perfect. Which I think is actually the third title this thing has gone by at times.
Fourth.
It's
It had a working title, which was a lot better. And then it had a, what was it, like a dumbed-down version that had cut out a lot of the gore and death scenes from it. And that had a different title.
Yeah, this has gone through a number of iterations and a number of titles each time. The history of this one is it was actually made in 1983. Now, this is actually on the downside of the golden age of slasher movies, as they say. You know, generally, it was kicked off with Carpenter's Halloween in 77. And then you had, 1980 when Friday the 13th came out? And in the wake of those monster hits, you had every conceivable fashion of slasher movie, prom night and sorority house massacres and you name it, they've done it. Well, this was at a time when they decided to cleverly make this film when all of that was starting to already ebb. So there was really not much interest in the studios. They completed shooting in 1983 and it took at least 4 years for this thing to find its way into theaters as a result. So this would be where the forgotten aspect of the film comes from. It was released in kind of a truncated form for some reason. There's a surprising amount of impressive kills in this. The special effects, as far as the gore is concerned, is actually kind of on the high end.
And I will say, if you look at the underlying story of the movie, right, put aside all the bad acting, most of the bad cinematography, and just the very low budget of this all, the story has kind of got an interesting vibe to it where I wouldn't mind seeing it remade like the proper way, like getting some actual effort behind it and getting a good doubles actor to play it. And while I'm on the subject of that, Mark Soper, I don't know, S-O-P-E-R, mm-hmm. who plays Todd and Terry.
Yeah.
He does a very good job of separating the personalities of both of those characters.
You never lose track of who's who.
Yeah, I'd say it was respectable enough. I mean, he differentiated them at least. And I actually thought at least when he was playing Todd, we'll go into detail a little bit, I thought he did a real good job with Todd, and it seemed like he didn't give a damn with Terry.
No, he did not.
He was actually walking the part with Terry. I mean, it was like he was walking on. But yeah. Todd, with Todd, he actually put effort. Yeah, you're right.
I think he
was trying to make Todd very likable, too.
Well, so. I think they filmed all of Todd's scenes in one day.
Oh, wow.
He changes outfits. He changes outfits multiple times as Terry. He stays in that exact same outfit from the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. From the moment he meets his mom, right, and for some reason throws a hunk of pie against the wall, which, by the way, they don't explain that's pie until the end of the movie. So for an hour and 15 minutes, I thought he had thrown a hunk of poop across the wall like a monkey.
Well, no, his mom gave him a box and said it was your favorite. Something to that.
Yeah, it's pumpkin pie, your favorite, I think.
Oh, did she say pumpkin pie? I didn't catch that then.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to go with my idea that was poop, monkey poop on a wall.
Made for a better scene, that's for sure. Yeah, because I wasn't real clear on her saying, here, it's your favorite. And the very first thing he proceeds to do is start smashing it in his hand like Play-Doh. But then again, he is in an insane asylum, so I guess that kind of reaction is not shocking. But to get into it, what Paul was referring to here, to throw the elevator pitch out, yeah, it does sound compelling. A couple of young twin boys, they're out in a public setting. One of them, for reasons never explained, decides to get an axe, decides to go to a car and chop up some of the occupants. And then he proceeds to turn around, frame his brother for the killing. The innocent brother is incarcerated, and the murderous one.
Say anything. He's like he wasn't like Ted Bundy in his way around the world.
He was Straight Arrow the whole time.
So roughly, he had one bad night. It's what
I guess
I gather from this. But this is, I know I was going to say maybe that's when the movie starts to unspool, but no, actually, we'd back up even before that part. The very opening shot, it does say broadly on screen, Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, it does.
In front of the drive-in marquee for a drive-in theater that is clearly in New Jersey.
Well, it was filmed at the Midway Theater. It's an old drive-in theater that's on Beach Boulevard here in Jacksonville. It's roughly 25, 30 minutes from my house. At least it used to be. It's been demolished since, way since demolished and done something with it. But the Route 35 theater that they take that shot from is not in Jacksonville. But the rest of it that's being filmed is in Jacksonville.
And it's not like I'm doing, you know, major insider information here. The sign clearly says Route 35 drive-in. So it's
I know. It's not in Jacksonville. But the rest of the scene, the condom salesman, the guy's
that's the guy. That's the one that steals the show. Yep.
That's Ted Raimi. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was actually his first film role, I think.
Yeah.
But not his first speaking role.
No.
I had to go back and rewind, and I did have to notice that he's a black market condom salesman.
Black market. That's where you want to get your condoms.
Because, yeah, I wasn't aware that condoms were hard to come by back in the early 80s, but apparently they were. And he wears a vest, and inside the vest is hanging numerous prophylactic options.
Jacksonville's in the Bible Belt, so.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if there were some kind of sexual ordinances that prevented birth control in your area there, Paul, but.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Well, there you go. Ted Raimi basically funded his college education by selling rubbers. Well done.
And, so, and the thing is, he has them. I don't know if you noticed this, but he has them on his vest with a safety pin.
Yes.
There's safety pin to the inside of his vest, but then he pulls them out of a pocket. Like he just has like five of them in his pocket. Like he's pulling out a roll of tickets.
I'm guessing there wasn't a warranty or guarantee applied to these sales. So a baby pin with the condoms. Okay. Well, he actually has probably got a pretty fertile market here because it seems like every single car at this drive-in has people engaging in sex. Every single one of them, including the adults.
That was kind of weird for me because, you know, back then in the 80s, there were tinting car windows was not a thing. No. So for me to have all of this sex going on, I'm like, is it Boyer Park or something? I didn't understand this.
That's the part that got you. How about the mom making out with some strange dude in a silk shirt where her boys are sleeping in the back of a station wagon? And I had to rewind this to make sure that I was seeing what I was seeing. But in that scene, when they show him, there is a rifle laying across their legs. It never makes another appearance. You saw this, right?
That was not a Chekhov's gun, apparently.
It's not just a rifle, dude. It's an AR. It's an M16 of some sort.
Well, it's in these parts of town, I guess, Paul, and you would know better than I would, it might be kind of might be kind of rough sledding out there if you're going to a drive-in. But one of the more amazing aspects of this film is that the very dark aspects of life that you would expect, you know, nighttime scenes, the drive-in, are extremely well lit. This drive-in had floodlights apparently all surrounding the screens. I don't know who was watching because you couldn't really see the image because of how bright it was. We could see everything that took place at this drive-in.
Forget about seeing. Did you see anywhere where somebody could listen to what was happening on the screen?
Nope. Not a thing.
There was no speakers.
No speakers.
No speakers hanging from windows, nothing of the sort. So, yeah, Mom, who is Louise Lasser from Mary Hartman. This was a sitcom on PBS that nobody can seem to understand why it was popular.
And she did her best in this movie.
If you say so.
She did as good as she could possibly have done with it. And the direction, because I don't think she was given any direction, because at one point,
no.
And now you tell me, I've never been a woman and I've never been in the depths of despair, but is it a typical Friday night to be sitting on the ground, eating macaroni and cheese and
out of the refrigerator? Green beans
out of the refrigerator and then vacuuming with a full glass of wine? Is that how it works?
Okay. The vacuuming with a glass of wine thing, that happens.
Yeah, that seemed like a documentary.
That happens. But no, you're right. It was almost like she was just told, hey, she was given like free life or whatever she wanted in this. And I know that she's well known for comedic timing and all that stuff. She was married to Woody Allen and starred in several of his films too. And so she's known for her comedy, but in this movie I was waiting for something funny, and then I realized she's just exaggerating. She's actually making that Mary Hartman character in mime and in actions, mm-hmm. instead of words. And so after that I kind of commiserated with her character a little bit. But no, nobody sits in front of the refrigerator and starts eating.
Sits. She was on the floor with the door open. She's got a bowl in her lap and a bowl on the floor that she's eating with her hands.
Yeah, she's spread eagle in it too, wearing her Thanksgiving dress. She's just into it.
I just fully do want to interject here regarding Thanksgiving leftovers. Seeing that, you guys can shut up about my turkey and mayonnaise. So there's.
Brad, until you recreate that image, sitting on the ground with turkey and mayonnaise and post it for all of Twitter to see, we're not going to shut up about it.
I'd pay back for that.
I would. I'd make that my header profile.
There will be no camera phones when that takes place on Friday morning, just so you both know. Okay, so to throw into the drama, and I'm using quotation marks twice on both sides of that word, what happens is, while Mom is trying to get it on in the station wagon, the two boys come to in the back of the car, and they sneak out of the back of the station wagon undetected and start wandering through the cars at the drive-in. One of the boys goes to a pickup truck and finds a hatchet, then proceeds to find a car where there's a couple getting it on. The male, who is in the top of the missionary position, looks out his window and is mildly perturbed to see a boy staring at him in flagrante delicto, tries to tell the boy to shovel off, who promptly then starts hatcheting him with the newly found blade with some pretty decent effects. I mean,
that wasn't too bad. Yeah.
All things considered, he did a pretty good chop job on this guy's face. This is Terry, the young boy. He then turns around to his twin brother, who is standing beside him, smears blood on Todd's face, hands Todd the hatchet, and then starts to yell that Todd did it, even though there's a crowd of people standing around that saw this transference take place.
Yeah, that was kind of sketchy.
and all he did was just kind of rub the blood on his face. That's all he did.
And the only reason this even worked is because Todd is catatonic and says nothing, doesn't move. He stands there and allows his murderous brother to do this. Okay. I mean,
and he went catatonic for 10 years.
Yeah, and promptly is incarcerated, or I should say institutionalized, at which point it takes a decade for him to finally come around and declare that he did not do it. So, yeah, we flash ahead to adulthood. Mom is visiting Todd in the asylum, and the doctor, God, I love the doctor. She was great.
Love this woman. You know the story behind her doctor, right?
Yeah, I did see that. She's actually the producer of the film, and one of the actresses backed out, so she suddenly found herself in a key role.
She didn't back out. She just didn't show up.
Yeah, exactly. She just said, oh, you know, the actress didn't show. Well, I guess I'm a psychiatrist now.
She would fit it on Twitter.
Well, and she did not really put a lot of work into the role. You know, you could tell there wasn't a lot of research and method going on, because in the one plot point was that she's telling Mom that Todd came to her with the truth and said, I didn't kill that person. My brother did. Now, and it's, this scene is just, it cracks me up. You know, Louise Lasser starts losing it in her Mary Hartman fashion, freaking out, to which, and there's a voiceover for some reason. And the doctor says in voiceover, my past work with hysterical patients helped me calm her down.
And then she just literally gets calm.
The doctor stared at the mother, and the mother stopped freaking out.
So it's hypnosis or telepathic.
that's her past work.
Nerves.
That was the extent of her quote work. She's like, I've calmed people down. And you see the scene, and all she is doing is staring across the desk. And Mom was like, but he had. Okay. And Lasser just basically stops acting. So Todd's therapy is going great, by example, is my assumption here. We then cut to the home life where they're having Thanksgiving dinner, and Lasser announces that her and her landlord are now engaged. And
that's
I'm trying
so
to
weird.
It was a very, I'd call it clunky, but I think I'm being too generous there. Very clunky scene. The grown-up Terry gets wind of this and clearly has misgivings about the announcement. And I think this is the setup for the whole movie, and that there's some very deep and dark Oedipus complex issues going on. Am I reading this correctly?
No, you're totally reading this correctly, because I was getting the same vibe.
Yeah, there was, and it was a little psycho thing happening.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe you know what? Maybe this movie is what inspired Stephen King's Sleepwalkers.
Oi.
Yeah.
I'm not going down that path.
How about that for some thoughts?
I would certainly hope that Stephen has some better inspirations, but that's, you know.
We've all seen his Twitter, Brad. Doubt it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just saying at the time. He wouldn't have been able to get a hold of this until 87, so he's already had a body of work before that. I'm giving him credit here where it's not earned, but all right. The home life we're getting set up has the grown-up Terry, who's a very edgy, sketchy individual. I didn't like him for the very fact that they raised a toast to their nuptials, and he raises a glass of milk.
And it was a full glass, too.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that right there tipped it off for me. Problems.
Now we know it was breast milk.
Very well could be. Yikes. And
oh, my God.
Welcome to the show, Aggie.
To this point, I'm going to apologize for my co-host, Aggie, and I'll let things stand at that. The movie starts to now get into the seriousness of things when the meal is somewhat disrupted with the announcement that Todd has escaped from his asylum. Oh, I also want to point out that Terry has, as one of the house guests, one of the newer arrivals in their apartment complex, who he met during a football game. they're playing football, and he makes out voraciously with his girlfriend. And then a neighbor comes by to introduce her niece that just moved in with them. And he instantly is hitting on this girl, not 30 seconds after a lip lock with his girlfriend.
Well, let's be honest. We all know why.
Well, because the niece can't afford a bra.
No, it was those killer leggings she was wearing.
Okay. I can go either way there. So, Todd is on the loose, and all of a sudden, we have to care. So, we are going to take a break right now. We're going to go ahead and refill our glasses and get a second portion of our meal. So, stick around with us. Give us a couple of minutes. Commercial break here, and when we come back, we're going to have our second serving of Thanksgiving's best blood ribs. Stick around, folks.
Was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
All right, and welcome back from the lobby, everybody. Hope you loaded up on a second helping of goods. We are going into our special edition here of Disasters in the Making for Thanksgiving. We're covering Blood Rage, the infamous and little-seen horror gem from the 80s, from across the 80s. Filmed in 83, released in 87 in various formats, and generally accepted now as a cult favorite in some circles. Now, when we left off, we had the family enjoying their Thanksgiving meal, the disturbed mom, played by Louise Lasser, the only real star of this film outside of Ted Raimi as a condom salesman with no speaking parts, and some family discord was visible when she announced an engagement with the landlord of the complex that they're in. And then there's a knock at the door and the doctor shows up. Well, she does eventually show up. First, her assistant is at the door brandishing a gun.
It's a Trank gun, though.
Well, yeah, we do find that out after the fact. But first, he braces Terry against the wall with a gun pointed at his head. The doctor rushes up. I mean, who thinks this is a good idea in therapy to walk around with handguns, and, or otherwise?
And why did he point the gun at his head? If it's a Trank, it's just, what's that going to do?
Bounce off. I don't know, but I like how she says, don't worry, it's just a tranquilizer gun. And yet he keeps it pointed at people the entire time.
And then it randomly turns into a revolver in the woods.
Yeah. Well, no, that was the one that came out of her purse, I think.
Yeah, she takes the gun from him. She goes, "Oh, well, I'm going to go search the woods by myself. You go look on the back porch for whatever that means. You go look on the back porches. I'm going to go search the woods by myself." And then she says, "I can take care of myself. Give me the gun."
Yeah.
And then she kind of like does this smile, laughing kind of head nod thing, like that crazy assistant guy. And then she just wanders into the woods.
Well, I guess, you know, when you get your assistance from Randstad, you're just on the hook for whatever they give you, I suppose.
She wanders through the well-lit woods.
Yes, well, first, though, UNF.
Before they though, the family's breaking up, and Brad, who's the landlord, is leaving. He turns to Louise Lasser and says, "All right, don't worry, I won't be long." And she immediately says, "Okay, but just don't be long."
Don't be long.
Don't blong.
I mean,
don't,
it's like,
be long.
This is how absentee the director was. I don't think he ever yelled action and cut. He just basically said, "Okay, we're starting," and then walked away from the camera. But
which would explain why they're playing tennis at night.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get to that. The landlord eventually is walking away with the doctor and her assistant to go look for Todd. Meanwhile, the assistant very loudly is asking questions about the nutcase brother that lives here so the whole family can hear him. I mean, this guy is completely out of control. But they go on a hunt for Todd. And I love the composition shots here. Did you see the one where the camera's position, it looks like it's behind one of the apartment complexes. There's a staircase. There's air conditioning units on the left. And there's this wide expanse of dirt. And it's just this very random location, except he uses this, I think, three different times in the film. And it is not photographically drawn.
That's Jacksonville in a nutshell.
Okay.
Staircases and random patches of dirt.
That's I'm going to question the cinematography here, or at least the location scout. But the doctor is going wandering through these woods, and like Aggie did say, very brightly lit. The moon was on like Klieg light levels this evening, and just calling out, Todd, are you there, Todd? I don't understand the medical practice this woman has going on.
And she's walking on a she's walking on a boardwalk, yelling out his name.
Oh yeah,
And she's like, "Hey, it's me!" As if he's gonna think it's someone else yelling his name randomly in the woods. There's no rhyme or reason to where she's currently at.
Now, I think there's supposed to be some mystery here between Todd and Terry and who might be doing the killing. They kind of set it up that way, but the two cannot be more distinct from each other as twins. And we get our first kill basically takes place. We go into Brad's apartment. You know, this is roughly 8-9 o'clock on Thanksgiving. So, of course, he's got ardent paperwork he has to get to while listening to a preacher on the radio.
And drinking beer.
Yes, drinking old style, which is what everybody old in the movie was drinking. I don't know that old style was available in Florida in the 1980s.
They brought it with them.
I mean, this is a beer it was brewed in Milwaukee. It's basically a Chicago Cubs beer. It's huge in Chicago. I think because of import laws, however, in 1983, this was not found in our state. Maybe the bandit took it over the border from Georgia. That's a possibility here.
Eastbound and down.
Or maybe they just struck a deal with the brewer and they threw a few cases at the production staff to get mentioned after the movie. I'm going with B here. But
that's most plausible. That's true.
Brad is at his desk drinking an old style when he gets confronted by Terry, who lops off his hand and it promptly rolls on the floor, clutching the beer can. I loved the shot.
It was so epically bad.
And we see the hand like flexing and pulsing. And then meanwhile, he's got about 7 gallons of blood shooting out of his wrist because
don't do that when they're severed. Not that violently anyway. And not for that long period of time.
This one does.
It could have been a bad reaction to the crap beer, however. That's a possibility too.
Oh, well, that's true.
So that's basically our kill. And now there's a big mystery. People are running around. Todd's escaped. Todd's in the woods. Todd's somewhere. Everybody's looking for Todd. But Terry's the one that's doing the killing. What motivated him to go off on a tear now?
He saw his mom with another man.
That's right. He walked in.
So apparently for 10 years, she stopped making out with men.
This is the first time she's dated since the first killing, I guess.
And she decided she was going to start making out with guys again after her other son gets released. Or escapes.
Okay. All right. I'll go with it.
I mean, I don't know how that's confusing. What part are you not following, Brad?
I don't have a psych degree, so I have questions. And we soon get another where pretty much Terry has just got a machete, runs it through this medical assistant of the doctor's on a patio. Where, you know, as medical assistants do, he's sitting down trying to smoke a joint on somebody's patio. Strange people's patio.
Lovely. He
just lights up in the middle of the night. That's what you do when you're a med student assistant, I suppose. But yeah, he gets run through. No loss there, really. But Terry is kind of, he's gone off the deep end here. He's really on a tear. He encounters the doctor in the woods. This was a pretty impressive effect. She actually gets vivisected at the waist.
And then he pulls the legs back and just places them gently where they belong.
That was Todd.
Yeah.
Which
that
I
was
did
Todd.
Not really understand because he comes across the body.
It was Todd. Yes, you're right.
You know, he's very distraught looking, and then he decides to grab her jeans and haul them over to where her torso is at. Because of course, while this is all going down, Mom is having a meltdown of sorts. She's not only eating food off the kitchen floor. She is on the telephone, repeatedly calling Brad's apartment, who's not answering, and does this for minutes at a time. This is screen time is eaten up with her yelling at operators.
And at wrong numbers.
Yeah, there was one of those too.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, this is a real emergency.
It is a real one. Yeah,
a real emergency.
A real emergency.
as unhinged as she is and as out of control as she is, the operator would definitely take it seriously after saying that. Now there's this other couple. Now, Audrey is the girl that he encountered during the football game and who joined them at Thanksgiving dinner. And they, at one point, she and Terry are together on the sofa. I think she was supposed to be babysitting. And he came over.
Yes, she was babysitting, and she had designs on Terry.
Yes, made moves on Terry.
That's right.
And then very quickly segued over to another guy and was promptly in bed with him.
So, and she didn't waste it. She was just looking to get it.
I guess, yeah, she's new in town and wanted to establish herself. And at one point in time, they decide, well, of course, it's 9 o'clock at night. We're going to go play tennis.
Because everybody plays tennis at 9 o'clock at night.
Well, she took a shower first, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely get to take a shower before you play an athletic.
Because for some unknown reason that was never explained, they walk into the room, Julie and Artie walk into the room with Greg and Andrea, and Andrea is laying on the bed, and it looks like Greg's laying on the bed, and his face has been mauled.
Oh, she's on the bed. He's in the closet.
No, she's on the bed. He's in the closet.
He's in the closet. That's right. And he comes out, and they're like, oh, hey, we got you. I can't believe that worked. We can't believe what worked. Did you scare the poop out of your people with the people running around? Where'd you get the stage makeup?
Yeah,
do you have stage makeup?
The two of them put stage makeup on to appear as if they had been attacked. And the stage makeup is so good that it looks better than when they are actually killed later on.
Yes. But what I don't understand. So this, she put this stage makeup on. And then to get the stage makeup off of her face, she takes a complete shower. But he just drinks tequila and changes into shorts.
Right. Right. And then decide to play tennis because, again, it's what you do. Now, understand, we've seen a drive-in movie theater. We've seen the woods completely lit. And then they go and play tennis on a shadowed tennis court.
Yeah, and then the ball goes over the fence. And then you see Terry watching them play tennis while she goes into the woods to get the ball. And then a ball comes rolling onto the court from a direction that was not in the area implied that Terry is standing, but he never moves. Like, he's standing by the fence the whole time. This ball just comes rolling up behind him. And then she comes from a different direction. So it's implied that he threw the ball. Where'd the ball come from?
He sent the ball over the fence on her side, but it came over the fence on his left where Terry was standing to his right.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Where did the ball come from?
Huh? And there's really no payoff at all for this scene. Not really sure why. And I'm also unclear why, you know, like, Terry would be so focused on these two. She just got into town. The other guy, we have no idea what their connection is, and neither one of them have any bearing whatsoever on the mother's relationship that apparently set him off. But is it Andrea? Is that her mother with the baby?
No, Andrea was the the girl trying to sleep with all the guys that she saw. She was the babysitter.
Okay. So the woman with the baby was just by herself. She's a single mom, apparently.
I think the woman with the baby was Beth.
And she was trying to snag a rich daddy for her baby. So.
That's right, a sugar daddy.
Yes. A sugar daddy.
She's on the hunt for a sugar daddy to take care of the baby. Terry now is on the rampage, pretty much taking care of anybody. The date ends up decapitated, whose head hangs from the staircase.
Which is one of the best scenes in the entire movie, by the way.
Well,
it was.
Not, the part I enjoyed was that...
Maybe his name was Epstein.
Well, he didn't kill himself, so... That would work.
I liked how she looks out the peephole and sees him and thinks, oh, what are you doing outside?
Normal.
Everything's normal until she opens the door and sees the bloody stump where his body used to be.
That's the worst peephole ever.
Or the best. It might have just zoomed in on his eye. And she said, oh, there, that's Bill. Okay, let me open the door. And there's no other part of Bill, just that. So, yeah, there's intrigue, there's mystery. The girlfriend that I didn't understand either, Terry's girlfriend is hanging out in another apartment with two guys playing video games on a non-existent home video game system.
Yes, and I learned, and I told you guys this, but I'm going to share it again. So the name of that video game that we're playing is called Star Rider, and it came out as a console game, like an arcade console game in 1983. This movie was made in 1983. There's no way that the filmmakers had this movie or this video game in their possession to play on a home console, because even ColecoVision would not have the ability to reproduce those graphics because it was a Laserdisc game, kind of like Space Ace and Dragon's Lair. The game was such a turd that it lost the studio $50 million.
I mean, and that's so $1983.
Yeah, you have a turd inside of a turd. It's a meta turd.
And I think we could probably even indicate a contributing factor on why this failed, because as far as product placement goes, you're kind of failing when your 1983 video game system is not seen until 1987.
Yeah. So I didn't even think about that.
4 years down the road, you're probably next gen already. So
what they did is they went to an arcade, a local arcade in Jacksonville, and they filmed somebody playing that game. And then they played it back on a VCR tape and then just handed the actors joysticks and said, here. It was a single-player game. It was not a two-player game to begin with, so it never would have used two joysticks.
And it was a driving game that didn't use joysticks.
Right, and it never came on the home console market at all.
Oh, my God, that is beautiful.
Wow. The epic failness of this is just...
They weren't expecting somebody to be looking at video games this far into the future.
No, I guess not, but wow. Okay. So pretty much we get to something approximating a climax where our tennis playing couple decide to go swimming, sort of. They basically decide to get naked on a diving board.
I've never seen a diving board used so much in a movie outside of the Rodney Dangerfield movie. Back to school.
Yeah.
This thing is predominant in the movie.
It really is. I cannot imagine it was comfortable for them to be on it in such a manner.
And they're going full out on this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're going to go, I suppose. Because Terry is... takes exception to this and ends up taking care of our couple because, you know, those are the rules of a slasher. You have sex, you have to die.
Then I'm looking at a shot right now. I'm looking at the exact shot. There's an air raft on the wall. Why wouldn't you use the inflatable air raft to sit right there?
No, I need the diamond plate grip of a diving board on my bare backside.
And there's a towel on this diving board. And on the towel, it's only covering his knees. They only put a towel down to protect his knees. Screw her back and butt. We don't want to hurt his knees.
What you're saying is he's a selfish lover, Paul.
That is correct.
Okay, understood. Well, then he deserved to die. our heroine, the slasher last girl, she's fleeing now from Terry at this point, takes refuge in the apartment formerly occupied by the single mother who's been killed. The baby is crying. She has a personal face-to-face encounter with Terry, but then gets the drop on him, takes the baby and flees to the pool area, unbeknownst to her, the death scene. And in the course of trying to hide from him, she goes in the sauna bathroom area and shoves the baby under a sink in a cabinet.
With its foot hanging out. Tell me you saw the foot hanging out.
Yeah, she just basically tosses it in there and shuts the door, but it couldn't shut all the way for said reason. Pretty much this is the last we ever see or hear of the child. And she takes refuge in a bathroom stall. This is apparently enough to thwart Terry, who before that was unrepentant and can kill and find everybody. Then we have the big payoff. We have the big final scene. Louise Lasser shows up, and Todd shows up, and Terry shows up at the pool.
And now, I'm gonna stop you right there, because I want to say that I did not see the ending coming to this movie.
No,
neither did I.
I want to give the movie credit where the credit is due when it comes to the writing. I did not see that coming.
No, they didn't telegraph this. The rest of the movie was pretty much garbage and crap and all this, but all of a sudden they decided to come up with something original here. So there is all manner of, we mentioned Oedipus before, I think it all gets.
Okay, so she trash can in the kitchen, right? And that's why she's still in her robe. And it's implied that when she walks into the pool room, for whatever reason, she knows they're in the pool area. She walks in there with the gun, and we see Terry getting out of the pool and Todd still trying to swim over to the edge. Then she just starts shooting who she thinks is Todd. Then when she finds out she's killed the one that she loves and not the crazy maniac who she thinks is the crazy maniac, it's a big twist. It's a Hitchcockian type twist. The audience is made to think that she thinks she's killing the crazy one, Terry. We think she's finally realized what's happening and she's killing Terry. But then it flips it again, and she thought she was killing Todd. And then that's why, I guess I'm going to spoil it, she kills herself.
Yeah.
Right?
She killed the love of her life, I guess.
Get on board with this with me, Terry. Aggie, get on board with me. You understand what I'm saying right there, right?
Yes, I totally do. And this is why when you said, you know, this was an Oedipal complex, I was like looking already at the end of the movie going, yeah, it has to be. That's the only explanation for this.
So pretty much we get served about 80 minutes of garbage and 2.5 minutes of deeply complex drama. Okay. And that is our movie. But I got to say, we have to pay heed to the dialogue in this, the one key pull away line in this that Terry says repeatedly as he is licking blood off of his fingers, says, "That's not cranberry sauce. That's not cranberry sauce."
You know, and the ironic part is that probably was cranberry sauce.
It may very well have been. So that is our Thanksgiving morsel. I definitely recommend anybody who want to go have some slasher fun this Thanksgiving, get on Amazon Prime. You can find Blood Rage on there for free. God forbid anybody actually pay for this thing.
Yeah, you can get the Blu-ray. It's a 3-disc Blu-ray, by the way. Blu-ray.
The one company, Arrow Entertainment, went so far as to produce a copy of this that has every single cut of this film available. The original theatrical, the original home truncated version, the secondary, or I should say the initial home video that had everything added into it. I mean,
and it's recent, man. 2015.
Yeah, it's pretty much almost a Criterion Collection release of this thing. But yeah, this thing is, it's funky. I will say this. And it was shot entirely in the Jacksonville area. Paul, take pride.
That's right. Well, I don't see how it can.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening, Paul. This show is one of the things I'm going to be thankful for this year, because this has been a blast already. Aggie, thank you a ton for coming on.
Yes.
Oh, thanks for having me. That was a lot of fun.
This was bound to happen some point. I'm glad we can do it in such a festive holiday fashion.
Oh, I'm sure it'll happen again, considering my taste in films. So
Indeed. I'm sure we'll probably find something that you'll approve down the road, undoubtedly. But
I'm sure.
Want to just thank everybody for listening, for giving us any audience time at all. Deep gratitude on our side. And I want everybody to enjoy Thanksgiving and go add to the nuts. If the family's driving you a little bit crazy, throw this movie in there. It'll make you feel a little bit better, I think.
Can I thank our sponsors?
By all means.
To thank Skeeter's Big Biscuits and Pin and Save and Head. And if you go watch the credits of this movie, you'll understand what I mean. They thank Head. It's supposed to be Pick and Save, but they spell it Pin and Save, and Skeeter's Big Biscuits. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, pretty much the producers went around town and just begged anybody and everybody for handouts. And we'll put you in the film. Of course, they don't tell them it'll be in like the last frames before the credits close entirely, but there you go.
I was dead when it said pin and save. I lost my mind when I read the word head as one. I don't even know who that is. It just says head.
That's got to be the tennis racket company, I'm sure. They probably went to the local sports authority and said, do you have any broken rackets in the back we can have or something?
Just think head.
All right. Thanks a ton. I want to thank Lou for pitching in tonight and producing. Thanking everybody
thank you,
for
Lou.
Listening. And,
Princess
well,
Lou.
I also had to thank the filmmakers for giving us this blessed holiday event. So
I friended her. I friend requested her on Facebook. Well, I'll let you know how that works out.
Well done. So I think if you come back in 2 weeks, folks, we are, I think Paul and I are going to work on a Christmas edition for your Yuletide enjoyment or other entertainment, however you want to describe it. But come back in a couple weeks, folks. Have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you much.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.